Morning. Today's daf Baba Basra Zion, fourth parak of Baba Basra. Mocher Sabais. We're talking about the sale of the house. What it is, what is not including the sale. We have gone over many different types of properties and real estates that are being sold. Houses, Beis Abad, Olive Press, Merchatz, bathhouse, fields. So cities, selling of cities. So really, the thing that we've been sitting on now for just a couple of days, with the Mishnah back on the bottom, Samachesam and Beis, is a Mocher Sasada, selling of the field. The sale of the field includes a lot of things, does not include a number of things. The Mishnah back on Samachesam and Beis itemized seven things that are included in the sale of a field, and excluded a number of things that are not included in the sale of a field. With that stated, we are now going to basically go over some more details regarding that which is and which is not included in the sale of a field. We are going to be starting towards the bottom of Samach Tesam and Beis with the words Amarav. So Amarav kol she'olam lo bechevel havishir, kol she'en olam lo bechevel havishir. So we're talking about trees that are significant and trees that are not significant, and we're giving a definition of what is considered significant versus insignificant tree. So the now this is going back on the previous Gemara, and if you take a look at the Rashbam over here, second last Rashbam in the Amud, Ula El Kai. So the Rashbam says that this is on the previous sugya specifically, Hechadam Alei Labar Meilane, where there was a clause written into the contract, says I'm selling you the field, excluding the trees. Okay, so we have a contract. In the contract, it says excluding the trees, and now we want to know what is considered a tree and what is not considered a tree, and we're looking for definitional a definitional guideline of what is and is not a tree. The Kamefarish Rav, I'm reading the Rashbam. The Kamefarish Rav, Elohein Eilane Shashari Shem Ketanim Heim, Arbei, Lo Mikre Eilane. So if they're too small, they're not called an Eilane, and therefore they're not going to be included in the exclusion. You got that? It's not included in the exclusion of the contract. Okay, and there's a girsa that the Rashbam didn't like, and let's go back to the Gemara, so now let's read the Gemara inside. So, tree so big that in order for me to scale the tree, I need a rope. That's big. That's a tree. And since I wrote in the contract excluding the trees, so that tree now is included in the exclusion. And Dianegola Omer, now as we turn now to the top of Vayinam and Aleph, as far as the judges of the exile, judges of an exile is a phrase. We've seen it before in our Masechta. It takes us back to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, but it takes us to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, who says that it represents the Amoraim of Shmuel and Karna, two Amoraim who are described as Dayane Gola. So Dayane Gola Amre, Kol Sha'ol Kov Sha'lo Havishir, Kol She'eno Ol Kov Sha'avishir. So they give what seems to be another definition of what is and what isn't a tree, what's big, what's small, and it's a function of whether or not the plow will press it down. Meaning that we have our ox, we have our plow, they're going through the field, and if it's a really small tree and it's kind of pliable and bendable, and what's going to happen is that the ox and the plow are just going to go run right over it, that's small, that's insignificant, that's not included in the exclusion. However, if it's a big tree where the ox and the plow are not going to just simply run right over it, and the ox and the plow are going to have to run around it, so that's a significant tree, and that's actually going to be included in the exclusion. That's part of this year. Okay, so the Gemara says that's their definition of what is and what is not a tree. V'lo plik, but the Gemara points out over here that really what we have over here is not a machlokus, but really we're talking about two different types of trees. Habedikle, habilane, we're giving guidelines for two different types of trees. One's a palm tree and one is a fruit tree. And the Rashbam explains. The palm tree. The palm tree is specific to Rav. The ilane, the fruit tree, is specific to the Dayane Hagola. And the Rashbam writes, and I'm reading the Rashbam inside, habilane, when it comes to a regular fruit tree, so you don't need a rope to climb a fruit tree, okay? Because there are branches that are really low to the ground, and so therefore all you need to do is just basically get on one branch and climb to the next, and etc., etc., etc. Good. So the Rashbam says, so there, I don't need a rope. The below chevel olim b'chol shari lanos ha'idei hanafim hamis patsim l'chol tzad v'shiur dekvish azol nami ikal amem adol shayach. I'm sorry. The chotzad, period. So for the fruit tree, so I don't need a rope to climb it, so I need some sort of guideline to know what is and what is not considered a big, significant tree. So there, it's going to be whether or not the plow can run it over. If the plow can run it over, It's not so significant. If the plow cannot run it over, it is significant. Now, let's go in the other direction. What about a palm tree? Whether or not a plow is going to run over the palm tree or not going to run over the palm tree, it's not going to be significant. Because the palm tree is flexible, and so it could be run over even if it's really big and significant. So for the palm tree, we need another definition point, and that other definitional point is whether or not it can climb it. But with a palm tree, however, there's no branches close to the ground. Baruch Hashem, we have plenty of palm trees around, so there are no branches close to the ground. How do you climb a palm tree? You need a rope. It's the only way you're going to climb it. So if I need a rope to climb it, significant. If not, not significant. Period. And end of our first discussion for today. Okay, take us back to the Mishnah on Samech Ches Amud Beis, and we talked about what is excluded in the sale of the field. And included in the exclusion of what is excluded from the sale of the field are going to be significant trees. I take us all the way back to the Mishnah. It's really the end of the Mishnah on Samech Ches Amud Beis. It's the last line of the Mishnah. Ben kach, last two lines. Lomach lo schitz asakanim shi yibas rova. V'lo sashomi rashi yasui yibetit. V'lo schruva murka v'lo stana shikma. Four items that are not included in the sale of a field. And the reason why is because they are significant. They're chashav b'fnei atzmo. They're significant. They're basically considered their own separate individual plot of ground. And therefore, they're not included in the sale of the field. Fine. That's the Mishnah. What the Gemara wants to know is as follows. This is the question Rav Acha Bar Huna asks from Rav Sheshes. And in the contract I write, except for this, the Churuv Ploni, so-and-so's Churuv or Stan Ploni, or so-and-so's Zedan. So, now, they already are excluded from the sale. But in the contract I write, excluding this Churuv, and I say excluding this Zedan. So, I'm excluding these particular trees. Does that mean also charuv hudlo kane ashar charuvim kane? So am I trying to say that it's only this tree that's excluded, but all other charuvim are not excluded, or to put it in positive terms, are included? Or no? Do we go to the default rule of which a charuv is not included in the sale of property, like the Mishnah tells us? And even though I identified one that's not included, the truth of the matter is they're all not included. And don't read so carefully in my language, even though I only identified one that's not included.
So, why
would he say
it's it? It's got to mean something.
Right. So, so obviously, the question has a built intention. Right? Phil's right. The question has a built intention. Why would he write it if it wasn't for a significant reason? On the other hand, we know that the trees are normally not included in the sale of a field. So the question has a built intention. So Amar Leilo Kana, so the answer he gives is very quick and very definitive. He says he does not acquire any of the trees. All trees are excluded, even though he wrote in the contract, excluding this churuv, this sycamore tree, he really excludes all the trees as well. Now, in terms of trying to explain his language, so the Rashbam says, we can give a couple of explanations. See the Rashbam, I'm reading it right alongside where we are in the Gemara. Chutz mechurav, hamurka ploni chutz mistana shikma, ploni. V'ayu bar harbi charuv in v'sdana, mahudim havashasik lo havimukhurim bechlal sadeh. So again, the Rashbam just sets up the question the way we already set it up. But we're reading the Rashbam. So, if he said nothing, all these trees would have been excluded because they are extraordinarily significant. They are chashav b'fnei atzmo. Ava achshav shashira echad ikal memer d'shar churuvim achar lo. So, but once he excluded only one of them, so implicit in his language is, yeah, I exclude this one, but the other one's included. Odil mashuri lo yigra kochel. Or maybe no. Maybe the fact that he excluded one tree shouldn't diminish his position, meaning his default position was already none of these trees are included. And yes, he only highlighted one of those. But just because he highlighted one should not diminish his position. Ella iika milsa litfui by chutz kagon derech metfinen le kedamer b'masisen. we generally speaking do not want to diminish the power of the seller. If the seller says something, even though you could critically read his language, as long as it's not explicit, so maybe perhaps his position is not going to be diminished. Why did he say that particular tree? So the Rashbam speculates. Maybe it's because he had a pathway right next to that tree, and he wanted to make sure that he didn't. He didn't give away, right? He didn't relinquish his right to that pathway, and that pathway happened to be right next to that tree. And maybe that's why he highlighted that tree. Again, we don't know, and we don't have to. We don't have to be so critical in the language. So maybe that's why he said it, just simply because there was a pathway nearby. Or maybe we'll go back to a point that we made yesterday. Remember yesterday, we talked about Shufa Deshtara. Shufa Deshtara is this idea that even though it's understood, and even though the contract didn't need to state it, sometimes they state it just to make the contract even more clear, more binding, more powerful. But what I shouldn't do is I shouldn't lose as a result of that. So here also, the Rashi says we could say the same thing. That Shufa Deshtara is the idea that, yes, I excluded this sycamore tree. All my sycamore trees are excluded, but I really like this one. I want to make sure, super sure, that this one is not part of the sale. So I write, except for this one, but not to diminish my ability to withhold all the others as well. Aval shar charavim lo chashish lechtov shufa deshtara to become a kompatechu b'mayde kamal shein charavim murkav nimkar b'chalsada kain nirabe inai v'ikar. Good, so the Rashbam says that we could come up with a couple of suggestions of why he explicitly excluded this this one particular tree, but truth be told, is that they were all excluded to begin with, and he wrote the language either because maybe there was a pathway, maybe because he had a certain affinity towards this tree, and he wanted to highlight its exclusion, but he's not going to, and the Gemara's conclusion is that he's not going to diminish his ability to withhold all the other trees. Back to the Gemara Eisvei. Chutz mi chur ploni, chutz mi stan ploni lokana. If he says, except for this particular churv and this particular stan, so he's not acquired. My love, oser churv ad lokana, ashar churv mkana. Now, the Braisa really doesn't say anything new, but again, it sounds like from the Braisa, lokana is only going on this particular tree. So, amale lo, afilu shar churv mnami lokana. The Gemara says, no, but don't read the Braisa that way. When the Braisa says lokana, the Braisa was going on all the trees that are already excluded. Teda diilo amalei sti mechur la chutz mistei plonis. Gemara says, look, let's make this point in very simple and rational terms. Let's say I'm selling you a field. Okay, I'm selling you, let's call it field number one. And I say, and he owns many fields. And right, more than two, more than three. The guy owns many fields. So I'm selling you field number one, and I'm in the contract that I write, and you know what? I'm selling you field number one, and I'm not selling you field number two. Now, does that mean that, what about field number three, or number four, or number five? So what do we say about those? What we say about those is, quite frankly, they were never part of the contract. So we're not going to read critically into the contract. Well, he excluded number two, so therefore number three must come along for the ride. No. The sale was principally on field number one, and that's it. And even though he wrote excluding field number two, but that doesn't mean that he included other fields. It just simply means that he highlighted one field that's excluded, but of course all the other fields are also excluded. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. Teda, the ilu amalei sadi mechur lachutz mistei plonis ahid lo kane hachron aisa kane. Do you mean to tell me that once you exclude one field, all his other fields that he owns is included in the sale? Of course not. Ela lo kane hachronam lo kane. Same thing over here. We're going to say the same thing. Even though he excluded one of the sycamore trees, but all the sycamore trees are going to be excluded. And again, he's highlighting only one, but that doesn't mean that he is including the others. Igad amre. We're going to do the same thing again. We're going to arrive at the same conclusion, but a slightly different version of how this discussion goes. Here in the second version of the discussion, so he is excluding half of one sycamore tree. Again, that's funny. It's a funny language. And what does he mean by that? So, chutz mechatzi stan ploni mahu, or he says, half of his stan. Again, these trees already, from a default standpoint, are already excluded. He didn't need to write anything in the contract excluding them, and he did. And he wrote excluding the tree, or half of the tree, which is already excluded. Well, he didn't write that, but it is. So, sharchur v'mvad elokana, hamash shashay b'osecharev kani. Now, as far as other cheruvim are concerned, so here, we're not even entertaining a discussion regarding the other cheruvim. They're already excluded. But in this tree, where he wrote in the contract, half of it's excluded, here, it's a pretty fair argument to say, well, he withheld half of the tree, which means that it's a concession on the other half. Or again, we can make the same exact argument. The starting point is that the tree was already excluded from the contract and from the sale. And even though he highlighted half of the tree, so again, like we said earlier, we'll make some sort of explanation in terms of why he's highlighting, but it's just that. It's a highlight. It doesn't mean that he's conceding the other half. Amalei lo kani, and again, the answer here, very clear, very definitive. He does not make an acquisition on the second half of this tree. Eis vei, and here we go again, same discussion, same dialogue. Chutz mechatzi chruponi, chutz mechatzi stamponi, shar chruvim lo kana. The other chruvim he didn't acquire, and the Gemara makes a simple diuk. My love, shar chruvim lo kana, ha masha shayr ba'osa charuv kana. So, all the other trees, he was not kona. But can't we critically now suggest that that half of this tree that he conceded that he did not withhold. So maybe that he conceded. The Gemara says, no. Again, we're going to go back to the position that the starting point is that all these trees were excluded. He pointed to a tree. He said, you know what? Half of that tree is going to stay by me. It's just a highlight. Meaning, of course, the rest of them are also going to stay by me as well. But again, he's highlighting half of one tree. Like the Rashbam said earlier, he had a particular affinity to that tree. He had a particular affinity to half of that tree. It's a highlight. That's all it is. Teda. And the Gemara is going to make the same argument that it made previously. Again, I point to you and I say, I'm going to sell you this field. Field number one. And then I say, and you know what? Half of field number two is not going to you. Okay, and does that mean that the second half is going? In other words, again, it's just the highlight of what isn't going to you. Meaning, I'm only selling you field number one. As far as field number two is concerned, even though I'm highlighting half of it, that doesn't mean that you get to critically read the contract and say, oh, but you know what? The other half I get. No. Ela lo kani, hachanami lo kani says, same thing is true over here, so you're not going to be kona. Okay, by mine, Rav Amram, may Rav Chisda, the following question was asked from Rav Amram to Rav Chisda. Now, as Rashman points out over here, our next discussion has nothing to do with fourth parak of Baba Basra, nothing to do with sale of properties, what's included, what's excluded. We are going to be taking a break. The break is going to extend until tomorrow's daf, until we get to the Mishnah. And what we're doing basically now over here is having a separate discussion. It's brought over here because, once again, we're going to reintroduce the Dayanei Gola. Right? The two members of the Dayanim, or two Rabbanim of the diaspora, specifically Shmuel and Karna, who are referred to as Dayanei Gola. They're going to be ruling on a particular issue. And so, okay, so the Gemara, it's a loose connection, but enough where the sugya is taken and put into today's daf ayin of Baba Basra. The following question was posed, and that is, Amafkin Eitzel Chaver Bishtar. So let's say I deposit something by you, and we go one step further than witnesses, meaning you can, we've discussed this in the past in Bab Metzia, I can deposit something by you in front of witnesses. But over here, more than that, I didn't just deposit the item by you in front of witnesses, we actually wrote up a contract where I deposit an item by you. And obviously I want the item back, and I'm going to be holding the contract, which are signed by two witnesses, until I get the item back. And so now the question becomes as follows. V'amar lo, hechazartem lecha. And the nifkad, the one who was asked to hold the item, comes back at a later point in time and says, you know what, I returned it to you. Remember? No, says the owner of the item, I don't remember. And not only do I not remember that you're returning it to me, but right now I'm holding a document in my hand. And so it's a curiosity, is it not? Now, I use the word curiosity over here in a very nice, as a very nice language. It's a curiosity that I gave you the item to hold. We had witnesses. They signed on a contract. I'm holding the contract in my hand. Your argument of, well, I returned it to you, it's a little bit fishy considering that I'm still holding on to the contract. There's an important piece of background information which we need over here. And that is the Rashbam. Take a look at the Rashbam Bishtar. We're going to be doing two Rashbams back to back. The first Rashbam, Bishtar, Shekasa Kama Hifkilo, V'chizmo Beidim, V'hani Lehashar, D'lamatzi Tain, Nifkad, Lo Hayu Dvarim Me'olam. Now, that we have witnesses. Now, that the that it's documented in a contract. So here now, from the perspective of the Nifka, the one who's watching it, so he no longer has the ability to say, like, this never happened. You can't say it never happened, considering the fact that A, there are witnesses, and B, was written up as a contract. Now, next Rashbam. Ve'amar le nifkad hayom alamacha echzarti lecha mahu. So the Rashbam reminds us of what we learned earlier in the Masechta, all the way back on Daf Memhei. Remember the rule that we learned earlier? That when I deposit something in front of witnesses, so the Nifka does not have to return it to me in front of witnesses in order to discharge his responsibility as a Shomer. So being that that's the case, so his argument of I returned it to you under normal circumstances, by normal I mean, if it were just witnesses, so his claim of I returned it to you is in fact going to be a bona fide claim under normal circumstances. Here, however, it's not just that I gave it to you in front of two witnesses, but now we've written it up as a document. So over here, so we can make the following argument. We could argue that really, in this case, the Nifkad is going to be believed when he says, I returned it to you. Why? Migudi by Amar Nansu. Vavamemen Uvishvu Kidulakaman. Now, what he could say is, look, circumstances beyond my control occurred, meaning I am just but a shomer, and I am liable for negligence. Thank you. I'm liable for negligence, but if it's something that was circumstances beyond my control, look, I'm really sorry. And not only that, but I'll make a shvua, and obviously that'll potter him. The Nifkad has that kind of ability to make a taina. So, okay, so this is what we would call classically in halacha a migu. So he has a migu in that he could have said nansu. Obviously, it would have required him to make a shvua. And because that would have been a successful claim, had he said that, he did not say that. So he told them, look, I'm really sorry, but you forgot, I returned it to you. So, this is a question now standing. Now, even though he has a migu, what's on the other side of that? The other side of that, right, we all know, the other side of that is a written document. So now, this is a migu against a written document. So which is going to win out?
That's the document is only at the beginning, not the end.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's a document that backed up by witnesses. We said previously that when you put them all up against.
Right. That's excellent. Excellent. Excellent point. The Gemara. Let's discuss. So, I'm back to the Gemara. We are four lines from the bottom. And the Gemara now, after reading the Rashbam, the Gemara now seems to be redundant. But remember, first came the Gemara, then came the Rashbam. So, on one hand, since he could have said, Ones, with a Shvua, he would have been believed. Here too, he's believed. Or over here, the argument of, you know, this is the Mafki talking, the owner of the item, it's curious that you claim that you gave it back to me, considering the fact that we have it written up in a document. Why am I holding the document? Do you have an explanation as to why I'm holding the document? It's hard to explain why he's still holding the document. meaning under normal circumstances, what would have happened? That when the Nifkat would have returned the item back to the Mafkid, so then he would have taken back the document and put it through the shredder. So, it is curious that you still are holding the document. Why are you still holding the why am I still holding the document? It seems to be excellent evidence that you did not return to me the item that you claimed you returned. So, we have a migu, we have a shtar, which is going to win out? Amar lei mehemen. So, on this, the question was posed to Rav Chisda, and Rav Chisda's answer was, he is going to be believed. So, v'lei malei shtarach b'yadem ha'bayi. So, the Gemara says, okay, but I don't understand your answer. Meaning, yes, I understand that you're saying that he's going to be believed, but again, what are you doing to the shtar? You're just going to ignore the shtar? What is the guy doing with the shtar? Amar lei l'tameich, v'cham alei nensu, mi'matza amar lei shtarach b'yadem ha'bayi. The Gemara says, yeah, but look at what he could have claimed. Meaning, in the claim of ones, so now, let's play this out. If, let's say, an actual ones did occur. Now, if an ones did occur, so now he would go to him and say, look, I'm really sorry, circumstances that were beyond my control occurred to the item. You know, as a shomer, I'm not liable for such an event. A shoel is liable, but we're not talking about a shoel. So, it's an ones, and therefore... I don't have to pay you back the item. And what I'll do now is we'll go to court and I'll make a shvuah that it was an onus and it wasn't something else. Now, under those circumstances, is the mafkid still holding the document? The answer is yeah, he's still holding the document. Now, yes, once they go to court, shouldn't the court rip it up? So we'll address the point momentarily. But at least it's right now feasible to suggest that in the case where he said it was an ones, the mafkid is still going to be holding the document. So as far as an explanation is concerned, why is the mafkid holding the document? It could be. It's possible. Amar lei, we turn to the top of Ayin Amud Beis. So if sof ki amar lei nansu la shua baye, so hachinami mai. Neman b'shua. So the Gemara says, okay, but even if there was a claim of ones, don't we have to make a shvua? The Gemara says, yes, you have to make a shvua. And the Gemara says, and not only do you have to make a shvua, we're going to go to court and we're going to make a shvua. And when we say neman, we mean neman together with a shvua. Just a couple of interesting points over here. First of all, it's a migu, but... Correct. It's interesting because the credibility and the koach in this particular migu is only going to be done in conjunction with the shvua. Generally speaking, when we look at migu, we say, look, he's going to be believed because he could say this. Here in this particular case, it's really not that simple. It's not just that he could say this, it's that he could say this coupled with also he has to go to court and he has to make a shvua. So, it really presses us in terms of what is the definition of amigu.
Because you assume the guy's not going to lie. He's not going to take an oath.
It's
strong amigu.
Right. Yeah, because you have to swear.
I understand, it's a strong
amigu. I happen to side with Ben on this one. I think it does really make it more difficult for the migu to be accepted, because the migu, generally speaking, is riding on the fact of here's what I could say, and you know you're going to believe me on that. Over here, that's insufficient. It's not that you're just going to believe me on that. Right. It's that, and I have to go to court, and I have to swear. Okay.
But usually we say people don't swear. So obviously, if he's swearing...
Okay. Look, clearly, I mean, I side with Ben, but the Gemara is siding with you. Meaning, clearly the Gemara... Right, right. I understand. But it does stretch our... it does stretch out the definition of amigo, what it comes to include. And it's even coming to include where your backup claim is not by itself going to be registered. It has to be registered together with Shvua. Okay, anyway. So what do we have right now is seemingly a very simple debate in terms of whether or not we are going to have and use a migu against a shtar. So we have on one side a shtar, on the other side a migu. And again, the shtar is very compelling over here. It's extremely compelling. Meaning, what would be in the event where I have a shtar saying that, hey, you owe me an item. I was mafkin an item by you. You owe me the item, and it's documented. And now you come back and say, oh, you know what? I returned it. So why do I still have the shtar? So I'm still holding the shar, and what do you have on your side? You have a migu. Well, he could have said onus, because he could have said onus, and he would have made a shua, so he would have been believed, so he's believed over here. So it's really on one side shtar, on the other hand migu, and what Rav Sheshes is doing in this case is he's favoring the migu over that of the shtar. Okay. Gemara, on this point, says that perhaps this correlates with another debate. Lema bepukta dani tonight the tanya. So Gemara says maybe that what we could do is we can line up this issue with the following brisa, sharkis ayotze ali yisomim, where we have a sharkis against that of orphans. Let's take a look at the Rashbam over here, who sets up the case beautifully. Reuven shenasa malso shimon lamach zischar. Okay, so what Reuven does is that Reuven is going to provide capital for Shimon. And like we've discussed in Bab Mitzia many times, the way that this capital is going to work is that we're going to take the capital and we're going to divide it into two halves. One of it's going to be a pikadon and the other one's going to be a milveh. A loan and a deposit. And the reason why we divide into two halves is that so it reduces the risk from my standpoint, where I now know that I'm not going to be losing more than half my capital. Because once I give half of it as a deposit, so then he's going to have to give me that back, that deposit. So half of it is a pikadon, and the other half is a milveh. So so Reuven shenasa malso shimon lamach zischar v'kasal shtar kamei ifkidlo u'mei Shimon. And in this particular case now, Shimon, who was given the capital to make business out of it and to go out and try to turn a profit, and unfortunately Shimon dies. V'hotzei Reuven osar shtar li yisomim l'tvoa mehem pikdono. And so now Reuven, who is the one who provided the capital, so now Reuven's trying to collect his money. And all this was written down in a note, and he was holding the note, and now he is taking the note against the estate. So now the estate is saying, meaning the kids are saying, look, I know that you're holding a note against us, and I understand that, but isn't it a possibility that dad already paid back the note? Inami, Tanis Mari Tono, the Ilu Hayamava, Ba'ama Shilva Ruven Lashimon, Ume Shimon, Kuliama Mode, the Nishma Ruven, Vigova Kalashar, Minia Summon. The Lace Lavon, Shum Tainagabe Milva. Okay. The Rashbam again just sets us up wonderfully. Meaning, if this was just a standard loan, and now what the lender is doing is just simply holding the note of indebtedness to the estate and saying, hey, you know dad didn't pay me. So again, the Rashbam says we have the rule. The rule is that you can collect from the estate. Yes, you're going to have to make a shvua that you didn't get paid before, but once you make a shvua, so you are going to get paid. So in other words, the estate is responsible for the account payable if the note is held by the lender. Rashbam says that we know, and that's clear. And that's not open for discussion. But the Rashbam points out over here, but over here, when Reuven gave money to Shimon, he gave it to him for purposes of capital. And what Shimon was supposed to do was turn it into profit. But half of it was a loan and half of it was a pikadon. Kidin kol ma'os anasun la machzis charki the mefarsh vazel who depliged dayan egola dahinu shmo v'karna v'dayane eretz yisrael dahinu rav amiv rav asi beperkam de sanhedrin. So on this case now, we are going to be debating in terms of whether or not under such circumstances is Reuven going to be able to claim his money back. And this is subject to a debate amongst the Amoraim. The Dayan Egola versus Dayan Eretz Yisrael. And again, just reminding us what I said earlier this morning, and that's why the sugya is over here. Meaning, again, the sugya has nothing to do with the fourth parak of Baba Basra. We're not talking about real estate. We're not talking about what is not included in a chatzer transaction. It's just over here because we mentioned Dayan Egola, so we're mentioning it again. Okay. And the reason why we're talking about this particular case is because it seems to correlate with the previous question of I have on one hand a migu, on the other hand of a shtar, and the migu and the shtar are going head to head against each other, and Rav Sheshes favored the migu over the shtar. So over here, the Gemara now brings in this case. So we're going to see how the Amoraim line up on this case. And presumably, this case now will correlate with the previous case. So far, so good. Udekule Amma, sorry, I skipped a line. I skipped an important line. Let me go back. So I am on Ainam and Bez. We're three lines down. Sharkisa Yotze Elisamim, Dayana Gola Amre, Nishma Vagova Kula. So the Dayana Gola, the judges of Gola, meaning Shmuel and Karna, say, Nishma Vagova Kulo. So you make a Shvua, meaning in this case, Ruvain, is going to make a Shvua and he's going to collect everything. Now the half milva goes without saying. The half pikadon, that's a chiddush, but that's exactly the point. With the shvu, he can collect everything. But Dayana Eretz Yisrael Amei Nishba V'Gove Mechsa, and the Dayana of Eretz Yisrael say, no, you know what you collect half. Which half, obviously? The half which is a milva, but not the half that is a pikadon. Udekule Amei Isle Islehu Denardat. Now, the Gemara says the starting point for our discussion is that we all subscribe to the position of Narda. Dami Nardai, Hai Iska, that generally speaking, the way that this capital contract is negotiated or is structured is Paga Milva, Paga Pikadon. That half of it is a Milva and half of it is a Pikadon. And this takes us back to Bab Metzia. Once again, we turn back to the Rashbam. The Rashbam writes, "Dami Nardai, but Bab Metzia, but Perka Makabel Ha'iska Diavinish Lechavrei Lamachitz Tzichar Pagavi Milva Lizchay Ba'Achrayas Hamikabel Dahinu Oso Chatsi Shenotam Mimenu Ravach UPagavi Pikadon Gabe." So what we have over here is a standard capital structure, capital setup, where I'm giving you the money, half of it's a pikadon, half of it is a milva. And gabeve einu chai v'achriyuso. So half of it you're going to be responsible under every circumstance, and half of it, no, you're not going to be responsible under every circumstance. And like I explained earlier, and the purpose of doing this is to limit the exposure of the one who's providing the capital. I did make a mistake previously, by the way. The part that is going to be unexposed is going to be the loan, because the loan is going to be owed back to him under any circumstance. It's going to be the pikadon, which is obviously open to risk. The Rashbam writes, "Dahach paga dekashakal miman mafkid ravcha v'hasam afresh taima avra abanda milsa denichale lelova v'nichale lamilva." Over here, it's mutually beneficial for both parties of this contract. Because now basically they're sharing the possibility of loss, the exposure. So now, if let's say all the capital was stolen, so now, right, under those circumstances, the one who was given the money is only going to have to pay back half. And then the Rashbam reminds us what we learned back in Bar Mitzvah, and that is that because I am borrowing money from you, and I'm paying you back more, so basically what we have to do is we have to structure it in a way so that this doesn't represent ribbis. And so therefore, going back to what we learned back in Bar Mitzvah, so I pay back the difference in terms of how the payout is going to be from this structure is going to be not adjusted half-half, but it's going to be slightly different so that it won't be a violation of ribis. Basically, for servicing this deal, so I'm going to be paid a certain amount, a certain payment. So this doesn't represent interest. And that's how we explain it back in Bar Mitzvah. So now, okay, so we have the case set up. So Reuven gives Shimon money as capital, and Shimon now is going to make business of it, but unfortunately he dies. And the way it's structured is that half the money is considered a loan, half of it's considered pikadon. And now Reuven, with the contract in hand, because the contract was written up for it, with the contract in hand, goes to the estate and says to the estate, sorry, but he did owe me money, and here's the sum total of the money that I gave him for capital. And now, can he demand from the estate the total or just half? Now, the half that he's certainly entitled to is the loan. all loans are collectible from the estate. You'll make a shvuah, but it's collectible. The question on the table is, can I collect the half, which is the pikadon, yes or no? And that turns into a machlokus between between the Amoraim of Bavel, Dayane Bavel, Dayane Gola, versus Dayane Eretz Yisrael. And so, my love, Bahakam Iflegi. Now we're back in the Gemara, and now that we have it all set up, the Gemara says, I think what's Nekud HaMachlokis, at the core of this debate over here, is Mar Savra Matzi Amrei Shtarch Biyadei Mai Bai, or Mar Savra Lo Amrei. And over here now, it's a question which we addressed on the bottom of the previous Amud, and that is, I'm saying you owe me money. Not as a loan, but as a pikadon. I'm asking you to hold my money. I'm coming back at you. Now, you could say whatever you want to say, but I'm holding a shtar. So, is your migu going to beat my shtar? Is my shtar going to beat your migu? And the Gemara says, and maybe, perhaps, that's exactly at the core of the debate over here between the Amoraim. Now, again, Rav Sheshes clearly favored the argument that the migu is better than the shtar. But over here, maybe that's exactly the machlokus. Gemara says, "Lo dekuli ama islu de Rav Chista." I keep saying Rav Sheshes, by the way. Just a short correction. It's Rav Chista. Okay. Fine. So please edit everything I said previously. So anyway, so no, the kuli ama islu de Rav Chista. The truth of the matter is that everyone subscribes to the position of Rav Chista. V'hachba hakamiflegi mar savre imisa depare meimar hava amar or mar savre emar malach hamavesu de anse. And the Gemara says that over here, what's at issue is as follows. That really everyone subscribes to the idea of Rav Chista. And one is of the opinion that had he paid, so dad would have said something, and the other was of the position that no. In other words, death unfortunately does not always present itself as, you know, as something which is planned and timed. Sometimes it's untimely. The Malach HaMavis comes. Malach HaMavis took him away before he had the opportunity and ability to say whether or not he paid back, and maybe that's what at the core of this debate is. Rav Huna Bar Avin sent out the following as a ruling, as a psak, where if a mafkid money by another person, and we document it, and it's recorded in the document, and he says, Hechzartilach, and he says, I return the money to you. And again, this is, goes back to the beginning of our discussion. Neman, he's going to be believed. Why? Again, because he has a migu, and even though the mafkid as a star, the migu is going to trump the star, like we said earlier, like we're saying again right now. Now, if it is a case where Reuven provided capital to Shimon died, we don't know whether or not the capital was paid back, yes or no. So what Reuven now can do is take his contract, go to the estate, and collect everything. Now the Gemara says, I don't understand what just happened. The two statements contradict one another. The first statement says that the migu is going to be that shtar. The second statement is that when the capitalist goes over to the estate and says, hey, I provided capital and I have a contract and it wasn't paid back, and he gets a full reimbursement, not just on the loan, but also on the pikadon as well. Tarte, and the Gemara succinctly asked the question. Ruling number one and ruling number two are not coordinating one with another. What's going on over here? Shani Hasam, the Gemara says what we said previously. Dimisa depari me mava amar. So he says, no. Had he paid it back, he would have said something to the kids. By virtue of the fact that he didn't say anything, it's a clear indication that he did not pay it back. Rava Amar Hilchasa Nishma Vagova Mechsa. Rava's of the opinion that under such circumstances, he makes a shvua and he collects half, meaning not the entire capital venture, only the loan portion, not the pikadon portion. Amar Marzucha Hilchasa Kedayana Gola. Sorry. Amar Marzucha Hilchasa Kedayana Gola. And Marzucha says that the halacha follows Dayana Gola. Now remember, Dayana Gola were of the opinion above that you collect everything. Amalei Ravina Marzucha Hama Rav Nishba Vigova Mechza. What do you mean? We have a ruling in the name of Rava, which is that you collect half. Amalei Ana Dayana Gola if Hamas Nisan La. So he says, I agree. But what I have crossed, what I have reversed, is that when the opinions were presented above, I had the positions presented above where Dayana Gola says you collect half, and it's Dayana Eretz Yisrael that says you collect everything. So when I ruled like Diane Gola, I had it on the in the reverse format of the way it was originally presented to us. So basically, I agree with you, meaning that in a situation where the capitalist has a contract in terms of how much capital he laid out, and now he's coming to collect from the estate, so I don't think that you're able to collect all of it. I believe you're only able to collect half, and that is the portion that is a loan, not the portion that's a pikadon. And again, it comes back to the question that we addressed earlier. When I have a contract and I have a migu, which is going to trump which? So that seems to be what is at the core issue over here of the debate. Seems like from the Gemara's conclusion, certainly from Rava, certainly from Ravina, that the migu is going to beat the shtar. And that even though a shtar is being held against the Nifkad, but the Nifkad's Migu, if I could have said this, therefore you're going to have to believe me over here, is going to beat out the Shtar. That seems to be the Gemara's conclusion, certainly the conclusion of Rava.
What about the lesser earlier, about the fact that Migu doesn't do two bits and the wind and the Shtar is blacked by
the wind? Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Migu
by Malkamaiden.
Right. So what happened to that concept? Why didn't they bring that up?
Because you don't have to return it in front of witnesses. Yes. In other words, the starting...
But the thing is that the Shtar has the original vacuum has witnesses.
Correct. I understand that. But if the starting point is I don't have to return in front of witnesses, so the witnesses now become unnecessary. Once they become unnecessary, so now it's just a migu. That's it. I know. I understand. I understand your point. But that's the Gemara's conclusion.
If a lender has a shtar, right? Why does he need to swear by the estate? I have a shtar.
It's a means of protecting the estate. Meaning there is a possibility. It's not. It's unlikely.
Well, the cases are very different, though.
I understand. But there is a possibility that dad paid it back. It's possible. In other words, the kids don't know. So as a means of protecting the kids, so therefore the Chachamim imposed a shvua so that so just in case. But in other words, the way I would present it is that really, of course, he's owed the money. He has a contract. He didn't get paid. In other words, the note says it all. And the Chachamim just has a layer of protection, so to protect the estate, protect the Yisomim, so they have him making a shvua. Okay.